Thursday, March 21st, 2024. This is The Better Life. I'm your host, Timothy Lawson. Living a better life means March Madness, any way you can think of it. I don't know any better, any gambler that doesn't have some sort of excitement come March Madness. I think even if you are, even if you're not a sports fan, I think you can at least appreciate the tradition of March Madness, the competitiveness, the excitement, whatever it may be. March Madness is an exciting time. There are so many ways to experience and enjoy March Madness. Now, I know I'm pretty sure I just said Wednesday, March 21st at the top. I'm not even going to re-record it. It is definitely Thursday, March 21st. That's the kind of week I'm having. I cannot believe it's already Thursday. It feels like it should already be the weekend based off how busy the last few days have been. Yikes. Okay, Thursday, March 21st. It's the morning of. There's a good chance most of you may not even hit play on this until after the first game is tipped. But I'm going to talk about what I am doing in March Madness, how I'm enjoying it. If you hear this in time, maybe this inspires you to try any or one of these, or at least put in the back of your brain. As you watch March Madness, if you're not enjoying it, if you're not participating in any of these types of pools, think about, hey, if I was in this kind of pool, this would be kind of fun, and tuck it away for next time. And then after I talk March Madness, I got a few questions from the Discord channel, and I will address those. But let's start with March Madness. I don't know a lot about college sports. College sports is something that I don't really follow all that closely. That goes for basketball, baseball, basketball, football, definitely baseball. I don't going into this, I couldn't have told you who should be one seeded other than the teams I hear Gil mention in his like little championship formula that he brings up every couple days. That'd be the only way that I could guess who could have or should have been one seeded. But it's March Madness, and as I told Gil over text yesterday, I'll be damned if I don't have some action. So here are the different ways that I'm enjoying March Madness. Now, first is a traditional bracket, right? Filling out your bracket, submitting it into some sort of bracket pool, and the traditional bracket is going to be scored in a way where, the first round you get 1 point, the second round you get 2 points, all the way up to the final, where I think it's 32 points if my math is right. It's like, if you're and in those, depending on your pool size, in a major way, you're just kind of trying to pick the winner, right? Because that 32 points at the end is the 16 and then 32 points for Final Four and championship. I mean, those are huge, right? It's hard to overcome that with other, upset stuff like that. But you do need to still be mindful of how big your pool is to know, how chalky do you get with your selections, how much variance do you need to put into your selections if it's a bigger pool and you kind of need to differentiate your bracket from others. And I think that a bracket is worth doing anywhere where you're getting some sort of free roll or cheap entry into a smaller pool, right? So that's what it is for me. So I have 4, 5, 6. I have 6 brackets that are currently submitted in some sort of pool. And I have those because I was free rolled an opportunity to get into those brackets. And each bracket, I filled one bracket, the first bracket I filled out based off of sort of just how I felt off the couple podcasts that I listened to and the expertise that other people have that I definitely do not have. And then the subsequent brackets that I filled out, depending on the size and the depending on the sort of the dynamic of the pool, so one of the pools I'm in, I got to submit 4 brackets, and the way that I changed my bracket was just kind of based off of the opinions in which that I heard from these experts. And a great example is, there's one podcast out there, I'll just say, Gil's podcast, Beating the Book. Todd and Will both agreed that Mississippi State could make a run here. So in the, you know, for those four brackets in the one pool, I have a couple brackets where Mississippi State's making the run. I have a couple brackets where Michigan State wins that first game, and then one of the brackets where Michigan State makes it, I think they only make it like another round or two, and one of them they make a deeper run. Like, based off of the opinions that I'm hearing, I'm not just like picking wild stuff to happen. I'm selectively choosing the upsets and the deep runs based off of the opinions and the analysis of people who know what they're talking about, right? And that's where I make my changes. I think it's Drake and Washington State. I think that's who's playing each other, right? That's a game where, you know, people sort of see it one way or the other. And so that is a game in which I have split the winner, two in this bracket, two in that bracket. I can't tell you who I think is going to win, right? I don't know enough about Washington State, or I'm sorry, wow, I haven't finished my coffee yet. I don't know about college basketball enough to tell you who I think, based off of expert analysis, who's going to win. But I can tell you that each of my brackets, the final four and then the winner, are sort of in line with opinions that I trust and respect. And it's not the same. Over the six brackets I have filled out, I think UConn winning it all might be the only one where I did it twice. I think I have a bracket where Purdue wins it all. I think I have a bracket with Auburn winning it all. I think I have a bracket with Michigan State winning it all. That was a sneaky, like, no one, that was sort of a, I know no one's like, there's no expert being like, oh, this is the team to make the deep run. But I was, that was sort of the, let me throw something weird in here. And if I just, if I catch lightning in a bottle on this, I'll win the pool. But, so traditional bracket. The other pool that I'm in, is a survivor pool. This is probably the most, cerebral exercise in sports pools, right? When you're talking about football survivor, basketball survivor, when you're talking about, Major League Baseball 13 run pools, which is, not a cerebral exercise at all. When you're talking about brackets, when you're talking about seed eights, when you're talking about all these, the most cerebral exercise of them all is the March Madness survivor pool. And what that is you, for the first couple rounds, you choose a team every day. And then after the first couple rounds, you choose a team every round. Sweet 16 is where, depending on the pool settings, it's either two more in Sweet 16 or just one in the Sweet 16. So check your pool settings on that if you're in one of those pools. But you can only choose a team once, right? You can't choose the same team twice. So you have to sort of have, sort of think about your opinion or what you anticipate, who's going to be in the Elite Eight, who might be in the Final Four, and you don't want to burn all of those teams, early on, because you could find yourself in a Final Four where you've used all four of those teams and now you're out of the pool. Like, you're done. You're even though you have not lost a week, you don't have a live team to select in the Final Four, and now your entry is dead. That's probably the most fun when it comes to the exercise of doing a pool, that one. And then this year, I think this might be the first year that I've done this. I'm in a seed eight pool. Shout out to Daniel for inviting me. I'm in a seed eight pool where you choose eight teams and you get points for every win, and your points are based off the seeding of that team. So if UConn, who's seeded number one in their region, if they win the whole thing, that's six wins and that's 6 points, right? 1 point for each win. If Charleston upsets in the first round, 13 seed, that one game is worth 13 points. I don't think I needed to talk much longer about it for you to kind of get the game theory on this, right? I don't know if in I entered two entries. I don't think I chose anything lower than a four seed in either entry, thinking, you know, if I can, if one of these, you know, double digit seeds wins once, that overcomes what a, you know, one, two, or three seed, you know, does if they, you know, run to the Final Four or Elite Eight or something. So, yeah, those are, I didn't think I was going to be as, like, excited about making those entries as I was when I finally submitted them, but I'm really excited for that side too. And then, those are the pools that I'm in, and the only pool that I have that I invested in, I paid for entries into the Seed 8 pool, and then I'm hosting a Survivor pool. If you were on Twitter, you saw me, tweet out. I didn't have enough time to really broadcast it everywhere because all of a sudden it's a lot of Venmo and Cash App payments coming in all at once, making sure people are squared away, and I didn't really want to get too lost in the mix, so I put it out on Twitter. I've been taking care of people there. The Survivor pool, of course, is one where, you know, I have money up for each entry that I have there as well. But the bracket pools, like, brackets don't interest me unless I can get a free roll into a pool. I don't know enough about this stuff to feel like I can, you know, pay for an entry and compete. So I only do free rolls into pools in which, you know, there's a prize. Okay, so those are the pools that I'm in. Then there's the betting aspect. College basketball, March Madness, is a fantastic way to get major market, you know, frontline stuff into accounts when you don't typically do that. And this is where I really take advantage of March Madness is I try to get as much March Madness action that I'm comfortable with getting in to sort of, you know, put the popular stuff, the popular sport of the time into an account. And I do so wisely, right? I tell people who I trust. You know, I take advantage of, you know, maybe getting a half a point here where I'm not getting it over there. Depending on the accounts that I'm betting in, maybe I even just take both sides at a low or no hold for the sake of getting that in there. But that's where a lot of my bets for this come in, is tailing, you know, like I'm looking for people that I trust and respect. I'm looking for their opinion simply so I can get that action into my accounts. And then I don't have any futures bets. What I may do is if you have a PPH or an offshore, I don't think regulated books offer this. Someone correct me if I'm wrong. But if you create a parlay, you can, and PPH accounts, a lot of them do this, you can select to keep a number of slots open. And what that means is, you know, if you think UConn, let's just say you think UConn's going to run the gamut here, they're going to run the gauntlet, I should say. That's six games, right? So you can choose, you choose to build a parlay, and you choose UConn to win on the money line for this game, right? And what, they're minus like a bajillion, right, for this first game. And then you, there will be a spot usually where you can choose to keep a number of slots open, and that's slots inside of your parlay. And then going into the next round, you go to fill slot, and there'll be an option there to fill a slot. And you choose UConn on the money line for that one. And you're essentially building a six-team parlay only using UConn money lines. And depending on who they're playing, and this is sort of the variance, this is the variable, I should say, in this, where you know, that'll dictate what the end price is you get on this parlay. But in most cases, you're going to get a better price on that parlay than you would if you just took them in the futures market. The only futures bet that I have is Mississippi State. I got them at 200-1 at Superbook. And that's just me having fun. Mississippi Rob, was excited about their potential. So I went in there and snagged that, because 200-1 was long enough to enjoy the lottery ticket. But where this open slot parlay strategy comes is really handy is, you know, you can really leverage this for how far into the tournament you think anybody's going to get. If you think Washington State can get into the Sweet 16, but you don't think they really have enough firepower to get beyond that, you can just do an open, bet them here, keep one slot open, add them as a second slot or fill that second slot going into the round of 32. And then now you have your Sweet 16 parlay. And look, there's markets out there for teams to make Sweet 16, teams to make Elite Eight, teams to make Final Four, teams to win their region, all sort of stuff. What I'm saying is you can often get a little bit more bang for your buck if you're able to parlay them, or you'll hear roll it over, right? So you make one bet, and then you make another bet, in the next round just on. So, Wazoo to win, money line, boom, I'm betting it. No parlay, just straight up win. And then in the next round you do it. And the benefit there is you can kind of quit when you're ahead if you think a team is going to lose steam. When you do the open slot parlay, you're definitely committing yourself to a number of games. But even in that, if you, and I'm just using Wazoo as an example here again, if you were like, oh, I think Wazoo can make a run to the Elite Eight, and then you've used them for two slots in that parlay, and you're like, oh, never mind, this team looks gassed, this team looks like they're not. You can now use other team, like you can fill that parlay with other stuff. It's an open slot. I'm just using it as a way to focus on one team versus just getting a futures bet on them in that market. So those are the different ways that I tackle March Madness as someone who does not pay attention to college basketball. And this is an example of you as a sports bettor, if you are a rec plus bettor or more, you should really understand the tenets, the angles, the opportunities, and how to get action in on different markets and different sports. That way, when those things come around, you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to be a handicapper of that sport to know how to take advantage of it. You just have to know where to find the good information and how to make the right bets. Otherwise, it's all soccer for me still. I'll be like everybody else. I will be, watching as many games in March Madness as I can, following the games, following the tournaments, like everybody else. But, for every modest bet that I will have in the tournament, I will have a larger bet that is in Major League Soccer, USL, or the Women's League, and that's how it goes. Okay, I think that's it for March Madness. That's what I got to say about that. Good luck to everybody. If you're doing any of those, if you're betting, it's a great. I mean, it's the best time of the year, really. It's exciting. Okay, let's go to Discord. Jack Mullaney has a number of questions here, and I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to try to get to as many of these as I can. And I briefly read these last night when he sent them, but I haven't really thought of my responses, so these are going to be more off the cuff than they could be. But here we go. What casino pet peeve do you have that doesn't involve the people, the staff, nor the patrons? What casino pet peeve do you have that doesn't involve the people, the staff, nor the patrons? So what irks me when it's got to be availability of games, I think. It's the, tables that aren't open, especially like in Vegas, it's like 9 o'clock in the morning, 10 o'clock, and you want to play craps, it's just not open. And, I don't know if that's the staff's fault, right? It's just the, you know, maybe just the decision makers. I don't know if that counts as a non-staff pet peeve. I think not. You know, that's a great question. I have to think about that more. I'm gonna bring that up with Eric on Better Life 2.0, and we will better address that question, because that's one that really makes you think about the different experiences you have and what experience involves the people or not. That's a really great question, Jack. I'm gonna defer here, and I'll bring it up with Eric on Better Life 2.0. When was the last time you got a W2G? A few years ago, I got a W2G on a Buffalo Diamond machine, actually, at MGM National Harbor. That was the last one that I got. With online regulated sports books, do you feel any additional pressure to accurately report all of your winnings to the IRS? I mean, not to put my tax filing on blast here, but I don't feel obligated on the amount that I'm getting in and out on the regulated books. I don't feel the pressure to report all of my winnings in there, because for every, I don't know, few, because I have my actions spread across regulated books, offshore, and PPHs, what's coming in and out on the regulated books, to me, isn't enough to really worry about the reporting my winnings there, especially knowing that for, you know, every $100 that I'm probably winning over there, I'm putting $100 into action at the video poker machine or whatever it may be at the casino. So I don't worry about it too much. There have been a couple wins on a regulated book where I have made note of it to when it comes tax season, if I don't think I have enough, you know, looking back at my records on that site, you know, it's something I should report. So the Unabated podcast earlier this year did an episode on filing your taxes as a recreational gambler. Great advice there. If that's something you want more insight into, Captain Jack does a good job of discussing pretty much just that for recreational bettors. Two more from Jack. What's something Vegas specific that you're looking forward to the next time you make it out there? Vegas specific. So food. I brought this up on Better Life 2.0 in February, I believe, and when we had Josh, aka Sneakers, on there as well, and he was talking about, like, you know, making reservations and getting, you know, going to nice restaurants, and Eric, you know, was talking about how, like, he really hadn't really appreciated that side of Vegas as much, because similar to me, like, it's just sort of like, you know, a path of least resistance, and not planning, I guess you should say, not planning those things, but just sort of doing it ad hoc. And you know, through that conversation, and just recently, you know, I've been watching, like, cooking shows and stuff like Next Level Chef, and I'm a Gordon Ramsay fanboy in some ways, so I like cooking shows, especially for, like, you know, background noise or just have on in the room while I'm handicapping. And I need to do more to appreciate the access to great atmosphere, good food, unique experiences when it comes to the culinary arts in Las Vegas. It's definitely something that, like, I've been to Tao once. I think I've been to Adiamo's once. Man, maybe I don't even remember if I've been to Adiamo's. I think I have. I believe me and my better half went there for a meal once, but I could be misremembering where we were. No, I think we were in a different venue inside of the D. I don't remember, but I need to do that more. And so it's something that I have. I am now looking forward to. Now, look, I might only make one reservation and only really enjoy it one time, but I am going to make a point to schedule, like, you know, make a reservation and, you know, really look forward to and really indulge myself while I'm there, not just get, like, you know, the simplest thing, or not just not, you know, like, really get a good experience there. So that's what I'm looking forward to the next time in Vegas, which is probably going to be Bet Bash in August. Last one from Jack, right? Jack here. What casino game has the biggest difference for you in enjoyment from being drunk versus sober? So what I think is interesting here is, you know, we often think about the difference in casino games of the difference between playing as a group versus playing solo, right? And that's usually the comparison that we give in casino game experience, but I've never really thought about how different my experience is. I would say that if I'm drunk at a Baccarat table, my friends have to be there, right? Like, I couldn't imagine being drunk with no one to talk to at a Baccarat table. That might be difficult for me. Michael Traeger's probably done it plenty. I don't know if I could do it. I would need some sort of ribbing from, you know, like, I would need someone there to make fun of each other and give each other a hard time or whatever it may be. I think Baccarat's one where if I'm drunk, I definitely need people there. Otherwise, I think I don't know if I'd really enjoy myself. Craps is a big one. Playing craps drunk is fun, but if you are by yourself, you're really exposing yourself, or you're creating a liability in that if you may not be able to track your payments the way that you want to. I have been lucky that in group settings that someone else has caught an underpayment to me when I'm not, I'll get paid and Mark or someone nearby would be like, hey, there is a, that's short, right? And someone else, and they may be drinking too, but it's still like more eyes are more paying attention. When you're by yourself, or when you're drunk, it's easy to not track that well enough. And having, you know, having numbers there is good, but it's still fun, right? I mean, you know, being being a little bacala, throwing dice is definitely fun. I don't think I would be able to play slots drunk. I think that's probably it. Even the, you know, one, I wouldn't trust myself to be making a wise decision in playing. I think I may maybe there's definitely times where I've walked through the casino drunk and I have maybe forced to play because, you know, you're drunk, you're like, whatever, I'm gonna play this is so close to being a play, I'm gonna play, and it's awful, right? You lose $200 and you're like, that was dumb, why did I do that? And I did it, you know, you do it because you're drunk and you talk yourself into stuff that isn't there. So that's probably the best answer to the question. It's probably slots. If I'm playing slots on an angle or whatever it may be, that's not to say that I can't enjoy a beverage while I'm doing so, right? But actually being inebriated, I would try to keep myself away from slots because the experience isn't the enjoyment isn't as good because, like, playing slot when you're chasing a play on a slot machine, it's boring, right? It really is boring. Like, if you're drunk, just sitting there, like, smashing a button, like, you're not, you know, your attention already is kind of, you know, you may not even realize what's happening. Like, you may have accidentally upped a coin, you know, paying more coins, you know, coin in. And never, anyway, so that's the answer. I think when we're talking about just me and my and the difference between being drunk and sober, it's got to be slots. Last question from someone else. Zach has a great question here. What is there a Vegas casino that you would be genuinely sad if it closed? Fantastic question, because I think the casinos that everybody really holds near and dear to their heart are not ones that I frequent often. I'm thinking about Cosmopolitan. I'm thinking about not that Planet Hollywood's necessarily near and dear, but I think there's a lot of appreciation for Planet Hollywood. In the Aria's one that, you know, Wynn even is one that we all enjoy. But, like, I don't frequent it enough where I'd be genuinely sad. I'd be upset because that's definitely a property you want to exist in Vegas, right? You want that kind of property to be available and to have that experience. I think the answer has to be Bellagio, right? Because unless if Bellagio closed and another company that's not MGM, like, either came in to buy the property or whatever it may be, if they didn't maintain the fountains, and you could definitely see someone coming in, either trying to change the way they work or whatever, like, that I think would be genuinely sad. That would rock the iconic image, right, of Vegas. So I think I would be genuinely sad if Bellagio closed, solely because I'd be nervous as to what would happen with these iconic fountains. I think I would be genuinely sad if Golden Gate closed down, especially if it closed and was no longer under Steven's property. And I only say that because I think part of what I enjoy at Golden Gate is a part of sort of what what the vision that the Stevens brothers had on that property. I really enjoy Golden Gate as a place to play craps, and even just hanging out in there, I kind of enjoy it. So Bellagio for the Strip, and I think Golden Gate probably downtown. That's it. Those are the questions that people gave me. Thank you so much for contributing. It makes it easier for me to get through a busy week and then, you know, want to get some content out and decide that I'm going to. Half hour into it. Man, I really am a monologuist sometimes. Thank you everybody for listening. I know I say it every week, but it really means the world to me that through these uncertain times of being able to, as a podcaster, as a new father, relatively new father. By the way, she's going to be 17 months, I think, this or next week. I mean, it's just crazy. Time flies. Biloxi's coming up in May, May 2 to 4 at Biloxi. Rob and I have started exchanging. We're finally finalizing what might happen on Saturday. The reason that Saturday is kind of a big question mark is, like, where do we want to be? Do we want to be somewhere as a group for the Derby? Or do we just want to be in the casino, maybe group gaming, and everybody can, if anybody's interested in the Derby, maybe they can go do that on their own. So that's something that Rob and I need to hash out. It's like we're not talking about arguing or anything. We just need to figure it out. And then Colorado in June 8 to 10, I think is when I'm – no, I'm sorry. June 6 to 9 is when I'm we're going to be there. I believe that's a Thursday evening, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That's when I intend on being there. Shout out to Thomas and Melissa for spearheading that. I will have Thomas on in the relatively near future to talk about that. Rob talking Biloxi will be a little closer to Biloxi since it's a destination we've talked about enough. We're going to save it for a more closer preview. I want to get Thomas talking about Colorado a little sooner because since it's a destination that we haven't really gone to, I think it's good as a group anyways. I think it's good for people to hear about that location, that destination ahead of time so they can maybe be inspired and make a decision if whether or not they want to join us. So I'll get Thomas on in the relatively near future here. I think that's all I have. Tip your dealers shirts, the blue on blue, the light blue on the dark blue. I had a couple sizes that were out of stock for the past few months. I finally got those restocked. The Biloxi definition shirts where it says Biluck, L-U-C-K, Biloxi in there, and it has a fun definition. We've redesigned those to better fit on the shirt. I got one over to Jimmy. He says it fits much better. The print location, print size looks a lot better. So if you've ordered one of these already, if you got one of them where the print size was too big, I'm going to, no charge to you, I'm going to get a new one sent out to you, and then I'm going to get it reposted on the website in the store for anybody who wants one of these shirts going into Biloxi, or even if you're not going to even if you're not joining us in May, maybe you want one of these shirts. So bettermerch.com, use promo code YO11 for 11% off of your purchase. That's it. Thank you so much for listening. I love each and every one of you. Thank you for taking the time to listen. On behalf of myself, on behalf of everybody who contributes to my March Madness enjoyment, on behalf of Thomas, Melissa, Rob, and everybody who is doing just a fantastic job organizing these trips that we get to enjoy, I am Timothy Lawson. Good night. Good luck.